morning. Yep, about to begin. Okay. Morning, everybody. Try to stay cool in this weather here. We are just as an announcement, and as I mentioned before, this is our last class in this series. A week from yesterday, Bezras Hashem, I'm heading back to the States for an extended stint for a number of reasons, all of them good, thank God, and we'll be resuming in September. This class is going to be continuing in some fashion. In other words, this time slot, there will be people, other individuals taking the slot from what I understand. And when we return, my expectation is that we will begin to study together the Book of Shemot. That will move from Reshit to Shemot and do the same kind of studies that we've been doing. Today, I tried to figure out, I've very, very, very much enjoyed learning with you over the year, and I tried to figure out to determine what might be a good final class to share with you. And I realized I'd be giving this class a little later today, and I said, you know what, the same class is appropriate for us now. This is a class. It's not focusing on Bereishit. It's a class that actually will give us a little bit of a taste of Shemot. It's going to focus on a scene that is very familiar to us. But I think it's an appropriate scene for us to study for a variety of reasons. Number one, as I said, it gives us a taste of the next Sefer. Number two, it is centered around the holiday of Shavuot. It's part of the scenes that unfold in our mind on Shavuot. And it's another perfect example, I think, of a scene that has been implanted in our minds since we were young that we need to revisit, and which is really what we've been doing through this entire year. We need to revisit, we need to look at, and we need to say, wait a minute, there's more here than meets the eye, and what might this scene have to say to us? And I think what we will find is that it has some very, very significant messages to transmit. The scene is as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu during his first major trip to Upper Sinai, go back down. Your people have sinned. They've created the Egel HaZov. You've got to go back down. Moshe Rabbeinu descends the mountain. Yehoshua speaks to him, says, I hear noise. Perhaps it's warfare. Moshe says, it's not war. I don't hear competing voices. I only hear the voice of celebration, of some kind of event taking place. He knows what it is, but he doesn't tell Yehoshua. He comes down. He sees the scene before him. He takes the luchot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given him, and he smashes them. He shatters them at the foot of Har Sinai. And that's the scene that we're going to look at for a moment. And first, let's take a look at its description in the text. This scene is described twice. It's described once when the event occurs, and it's described a second time in the book of Devarim when Moshe Rabbeinu recalls it for the people of Israel. And much of what we find in the book of Devarim, a lot, not all of it, but some of it, is recollections of Moshe of events shared between him and the people. So the first paragraph on your page reads, Vayhi kasher karav el hamachaneh. And it was when Moshe arrives or gets close to the camp. Vayar eso egel umecholot. And he sees the calf, the golden calf, and the dancing and the celebration. Vayichar af Moshe. And Moshe was angered. Vayashlech miyadav. And he threw, it would seem, from his hand, et haluchot vayishaber otam tachasahar. He threw down the tablets and he shattered them beneath the mountain. The second time this event is recalled by Moshe, it pretty much seems to follow the same description. Vo'era, and I saw. V'hinei chatasem la'Hashem Elokeichem. I saw that you had sinned to God. Now remember, he's talking, when he says you, he's now talking to the next generation. Right? He's talking to the children of the people. All right? Asisem lochem egel masecho. You made for yourself for yourselves an molten idol, an egel calf. Sartem maher min haderech asher tzivo Hashem eschem. You went away. You strayed speedily from the path that God had commanded you. Vo et pos bishnei haluchot, and I grabbed the two luchot. Va'ashlichem me'al yadai, and I thrust them from my hands. Va'ashabrim la'inechem, and I shattered them to your eyes, in front of you. So those are the descriptions. As I said, they pretty much match. There are nuances that Moshe adds in terms of how he felt when he saw what was happening. But then the next question is, how is this event perceived? God doesn't command him to do this, right? He shatters the luchot. So we find that the Talmud discusses this. The Talmud says that certain things that Moshe did on his own that Hashem later agreed to or put his stamp of approval on. And one of them is the breaking of the luchot. One of them is the shattering of the tablets. If you take a look at the third paragraph on your page, it says, v'hiskima dato l'da'at hamakom, that this is a statement from the Talmud, that his da'as, his intent, or his thought was agreed to by God, dechsiv asher shibarto, because when God tells him to make the second luchot, he says, under the first asher shibarto, that you shattered, which seems to be unnecessary. Moshe knows that he shattered them. So, Amar Eish Lakesh, Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeyasher kochacho sheshibarto. Right? Yeyasher koyach. You know, that, by the way, everybody says yasher koyach. It's yeyasher kochacho, which means may your strength be straightened. All right? You did the right thing. Yasher koyach. But even more telling and even more startling is a statement by Rashi. And it's the last Rashi in the Torah. And it's the last Rashi in the Torah on the last words in the Torah. The Torah ends with a paragraph that says, in Dvarim, V'lo kam navi od b'Yisrael kam Moshe, then there never was another navi like Moshe, asher yadoa Hashem ponim el pamim, that God saw face to face, v'chol ha'osos, and then it goes through a whole litany of things, to the wonders and the signs which Hashem sent him to do, etc. And the rabbis take all of these phrases, and if you look at Rashi down below, you'll see an example of this. They say, what does each one of these phrases are describing Moshe, what does each one of these phrases refer to? L'chol hayod hachazakah, it says, all of his strong hand, shekibel et haTorah beluchot biyado, it refers to receiving the Torah in his hand. L'chol hamorah hagadol, all of the awesome things that he did, nisim ugvuros shebamidbar hagadol, he did the things, the great miracles in the Midbar. But the last words in the Torah, le'enei kol Yisrael, that Moshe did to the eyes of the entire Jewish people, shenoso libo lishbar haluchot le'eneihem, that he decided to shatter the luchot before the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. Because you see, he says in Devarim, le'eneihem, so to your eyes, so therefore. And Rashi then quotes the Gemara that says, Yeyasher kochacho sheshibarto. So this is startling. The last thing Rashi says the Torah wants us to remember about Moshe, the thing that should remain in our mind about this man, is what? That he shattered the luchos. Right? The culmination. That's really very strange. All right, we're going to talk about that. Seems a little more considered. Right, correct. That's why I said there's more of a mirror in the second statement that as to what his thinking was or what he says his thinking was. So let's stop for a minute. and let's really, because you're opening the door for our conversation. What's going on here? Moshe Rabbeinu comes down the mountain, sees the Egel HaZahav. You're Moshe for a moment. What's the first thing you do? You shatter the tablets that God gave you? It's counterintuitive, isn't it? I mean, what you should do is shatter the Egel, which he then does. But these are tablets that are holy, that are intrinsic. I mean, these are tablets, let's remember, unlike the second set of tablets, that are created totally by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? I could have argued, you know what, Moshe, that was the wrong thing to do. You don't shatter God-given tablets. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. Excellent. All right. So we're now we're starting to back up and say, wait a minute. Okay. We've seen this scene, but did we ever stop to think about it? Did we ever stop to think about this act of shattering luchot? So now we see that it is an important event, so important that clearly the rabbis were wrestling with its impact and had to say that God agreed with it. By the fact they have to say God agreed with it, there's a possibility that what? That he wouldn't have agreed with it, right? And Rashi is telling me that it may be the most important thing that Moshe does on some level. So we need to understand this, right? So what might surprise you, but shouldn't surprise you, is Chazal wrestled with this. They aren't like us. They didn't read the text and say, oh, that's interesting, and move on. They said, wait a minute. Why did he break the luchot? And what you find is a wide array of rabbinic opinion as to the position, as to the impact of this particular event, and as to what it might mean. So let's start with the Rashbam. Right, now the Rashbam, by now you should know, if you still don't know, is my favorite rabbinic, classical rabbinic interpreter. And the Rashbam is, the reason he is because he's the Pashtan par excellence. He's the one who I believe, among the classical commentaries, struggles to maintain the straightforward interpretation of the text. What is striking here is the position the Rashbam takes. Read the Rashbam. Vayashlech mihado kishero'o ha'egel toshash kocho v'lo haya bo koach v'hishlicham rachok mimenu k'tzah shelo yazik raglov bin noflam. Wow. Says the Rashbam, you know how I interpret this? Moshe, it wasn't an impulsive act. It was an involuntary act. Moshe did not decide to throw down the luchot. Moshe did not even impulsively decide to throw down the luchot. What happened is he's holding these luchot and he's about to faint. And therefore, what does he do? He throws them because he has to stay somewhat close to the text, but he's only pushing them away because they're going to drop on his feet. Now that is not Pashut Pshat, I don't think, is it? So what's going on here? Well, okay, so the Rashbam, correct, the Rashbam clearly, as much of a Pashtan as he is, all right, is unwilling to accept that Moshe would consciously or even impulsively shatter the luchot. It's not possible. Not possible. And therefore, the only explanation that the Rashbam can accept is that he became so weak that he simply wasn't able. And look what the Rashbam does at the end of his interpretation, which is unusual. He says, V'kein ro'isi b'prokim shel Rebbe Eliezer v'ikob pshut al kach. He says, I saw this approach. This isn't just my approach, he says. This approach is found in the Medrash. Right? And again, he usually doesn't quote Medrashim. And the Medrash goes a step further. The Medrash says the following. The Medrash says that when Moshe comes down the mountain, he is carrying luchot that are miraculous because they are so heavy that they're carrying themselves. He can't even carry them. And their osios are carrying them. And that when Moshe reached the bottom of the mountain, that kedushah was poreach, that miraculous nature of the... And suddenly these luchot, which were, and I'll coin a word, carryable until that moment, right, became impossible to hold. And which the Rashbam doesn't go that far, right? The Rashbam, you know, cleans up the Medrash a little bit from his perspective. He says, I'm not going to go to this mystical explanation that they were carrying themselves, but I am going to accept the position of the Medrash, which says that this was... It just happened. He could no longer hold them. Shine. Yeah. So that's why the Rashbam has to say, to stay close to the Pshat on some level, that what? That he threw them a bit so they wouldn't land on his feet. Right? Well, that's... So you're arguing with the Rashbam. All right? But it's important for us to understand what's going on here. According to that interpretation. Now, it is not, again, it seems to go against the interpretation where in both psukim before us, it says he threw them. You know, it doesn't say he dropped them. He says, v'ashlichem, which is, you know, I threw them. So the Rashbam will say, because I threw them because I didn't want them to break my toes. Right? I threw them. But what you have to see here is the struggling of a commentary with something that he is unwilling to accept. Even the here is a Pashtan who is saying, I can't take it. I cannot accept that Moshe Rabbeinu would of any volition voluntarily break the luchot. And therefore, even I have to go to some sort of medrashic interpretation, but I won't accept the medrashic interpretation entirely because that's too medrashic for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to accept the theory of the medrash that it becomes too heavy without taking the mysticism of the medrash. And therefore, I'm going to say he became weak. He was so overcome with whatever that he became weak. He had to drop them to save his own... His own health, he threw them a bit, and that's the way I understand it. Take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban also says that it was an involuntary act, but he doesn't go far as the Rashbam. The Ramban, Nachmanides, says, look at the underlined section, Aval hizkiro b'kan b'sefer ma'aloson. That the Torah goes out of its way to tell us the significance of these luchot. Lomar ki lo nimna Moshe b'chol zem ilishbarosa, to tell us that in spite of their holiness, Moshe did not hesitate to break them. Ki chora lo bir oso hamase hara hahu v'lo yachol lehisapek. Says the Rashba, the Ramban. It says Vayicharaf. Moshe said, "I got angry." Moshe was angered. He broke them in a fit of anger. He saw what was in front of him. He couldn't control himself. This wasn't a thought fit. Now remember, this is still the same Moshe who is told by God what to expect to see, right? So he's coming down the mountain fully expecting to see the scene. But what the Ramban would probably argue is that there's a very big difference. And if you look at what it says in the text, it says, Vayares ha'egel v'hamacholot. Very big difference between being told in theory, you know, you're going to go down and see an egel, to actually going down, seeing that egel, seeing the nation frolicking in front of it, and I'm cleaning up my language, right? And getting, and this ties into what else? Ties into Moshe's personality, doesn't it? We've spoken about Moshe. This is it the first time he gets angry? I wonder. He gets angry at other times. Right? He gets angry at, he gets anger at Bnei Yisrael. Later, it will be his anger, according to the Rambam, that will doom him. The Rambam will say that the ched at Mei Meriva is that he hits the rock because he's angry. But this is, it's interesting, I have to look up the words by Yicharaf Moshe. This is the first, this is in line with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, what we said, what was Moshe's Rabbeinu in contrast to Aaron? Aaron is the Oev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom. What is Moshe? Moshe is Hadin Yikov Esahar. What's right? I don't care what stands in my way. Moshe looks at this. Done. And that's the Ramban. Was it a voluntary, was it a thought-filled process? Was it something where, no, according to the Ramban, I got angry, I threw him down. Yes. Right. Well, that is correct. Again, that we're gonna get there. In other words, so far the first two commentaries we've seen, from one perspective or another, see it as an completely involuntary or partially involuntary act. In other words, according to the Rashbam, it's an unavoidable, almost accident. According to the Ramban, it's an understandable response, reaction, right? Then we get to a whole nother possibility. And this one is very interesting. There are those in the Medrash and beyond who say that Moshe is reacting with thought as a defensive maneuver to defend the people. This is almost the exact opposite of those first two commentaries, which is Moshe looks and says, oh my God, they're in trouble. Right? And I've got to help them. I've got to protect them. And here are two examples of that, both from the Medrash Rabbah. Omar Moshe, looking at the defensive maneuver, Omar Moshe, mutavni donin kishogagin va'al yume zidin. There is a spectrum of responsibility in Jewish law. Right? This is an interesting aside. Spectrum of responsibility runs from mazid at the top. What's mazid? Conscious, I perpetrate something with full intent, etc. What's the opposite of mazid? Nope. That's a trick question. The opposite of mazid is onus. The opposite of mazid is total accident or force of circumstance. So mazid is consciously doing an act. Onus is, the brakes on my car, I checked them yesterday and they failed today. All right? In other words, I am totally blameless. I have no... Right, that's onus. Shogeg? Shogeg is somewhere in the middle. Shogeg is, I am negligent. Right? I should have known better. I'm not mazed. I'm driving around in a car where I should have checked the brakes. I didn't check the brakes. Am I consciously guilty of murder? No. But am I responsible on some level when something happens? I sure am. Says Moshe, I've got to save them. These luchot that are here are evidence of the depth of their sin. Right? What's one of the commandments? Don't make idols. If I bring this down and this becomes evidence, they're going to be accused of being mazid. They're going to end up, so therefore, better they should be shogeg. Better that I should break the luchot and claim they didn't know better than I should be giving them the luchot or presenting or protecting and perpetuating the luchot, and it should be damning evidence against them. This is an interesting thing. For example, there's a famous halach of hocheach tochiach es amisecho. You're supposed to rebuke your friend, right? That's a mitzvah. But there's also a statement in the Talmud that you're only supposed to give tochacha shenishmat. You're only supposed to give rebuke that you think is going to be listened to or will be heard, right? Which means before you criticize, think of what the ramifications. And sometimes the problem is this. I go up to someone who's driving on Shabbat, and I say, and let's just say it's someone who doesn't know that driving on Shabbat is prohibited. And I know if I go and tell him, okay, now he's going to know it's prohibited, what is he going to do? Still going to drive. I haven't helped him, right? I've changed him from a shogeg to a mazid. So that's what Moshe's doing here. He's protecting Bnei Yisrael from the evidence that would damn them. The second possibility, and this is even more interesting, is what Moshe is doing is deliberately sinning. Breaking the tablets is a sin. Wow. But what does he do? He says, if they're going to sin, then I'm going to sin. And then I'm going to go to God and say, if you're going to destroy them, then take me too. And maybe, and by the way, that's what he does. That's what he does. In Parshas Ki Tisa, he goes to Hashem and he says, Mecheni no mi sifrecha asher kasavta. If you're going to destroy them, then erase me from the book. And the book is what book? And the rabbis say the book of the Torah, whatever. And God's answer to him, by the way, is I'm going to erase the people who are guilty. You can't take that. You're guilty now of trying to be the carbon for them. Doesn't work out that way. But that is the Medrash. I'm going to break these luchot so that I'll be culpable. And then God is going to have to, he can't punish them without punishing me, and maybe he won't want to punish me, and therefore he won't punish them. That's again, is this pashut pshat? It's kind of far-fetched a little bit. But it is an approach which says that Moshe is doing this with thought, but the thought is to protect the people. He's still acting in that role, which he acts in all the time, or most of the time, which is after he yells at them and screams at them and defend and tells them how bad they are, he then goes to God and says, forgive them, right? Please preserve them. They didn't know better. And he serves as their defense attorney. Then you have Rashi, look down at the bottom of the page, section C, where Rashi will say it is a thought-filled process, but it's really a condemnation of the nation. What Moshe says to himself is, look, I got a halacha which said, kol orel lo yochal bo. When it comes to the Pesach sacrifice, if you are mishumad, if you're someone who is antithetical and doesn't believe and denies the Torah, cannot be part of the Pesach sacrifice. An orel, an uncircumcised person, someone who denies the mitzvot. He says, an orel can't eat from the Pesach sacrifice. The whole nation are mishumadim now. They're all deniers. Can they participate in this Torah? No. I'm breaking it. And it's really a condemnation of the nation. No further. Then we get to a whole nother approach. Turn the page. And this approach, some of you have already been hinting at it, is educative. What is Moshe doing here? He is continuing in his role as Moshe Rabbeinu. He is continuing to educate the people. And the shattering of the luchot is part of that educational process, in spite of the anger and the upset and everything. And I'll give you two examples, and then I'll go to a final one, which is the one that I want to explore a little more in depth. The first one is just a statement by the Netziv, the Hamek Davar. Rav Berlin says the following. Moshe is told by God on the top of the mountain what? That the people are, he does not shatter the luchot upon hearing that news. He waits. until he gets down to the bottom of the mountain. Now, others will say, that's because he got angry, that's because, right? We already have an explanation, you know, of why he waits, because it wasn't something he wanted to do. The Netziv says this was with thought. He says to himself, I've got to startle them, right? That's what you were saying. I've got to somehow shake them up, because they're going to have to, and the Netziv says it's because he's going to have to punish them, and they're going to have to accept that punishment. And he says, how do I get them to recognize the depth of what they've done? Right? Now, this is putting aside all of the interpretations of what the Egel Azov was in the, also. That's a whole other discussion. What is it that they did? What is it that the Egel represents? But how do I get them to recognize what they did? There's only one way. I'm going to go down to the bottom of this mountain, and when I see them and they see me, I'm going to shatter these luchot. I'm going to shock them. And they're going to understand that they, what they did was so onerous and so horrific that when I then tell the Levim to kill the people who were involved, and I then make them drink of the water in which I grind up the egel, or whatever, and whatever God's punishment will be, they will understand. They'll have to accept it, because what gets to the Netziv is, he says, why is it that when Moshe commands the Levim to kill those who perpetrate, there isn't a rebellion? Why is it the nation? I mean, in other cases, God did the punishment. In this case, much of the punishment comes about at the hands of Moshe. And he says it's because Moshe has shocked them to the point that they realize they have nothing to argue about. Number two, this gets a little bit deeper. The Meshech Chochma. Meshech Chochma says, let's back up a minute and think about what this Egel really was. And it was, according to some, and this is a whole nother class, there are those who say it was idolatry. But the Pashut Pshat, the simple explanation is that it was an attempt to replace Moshe. It was an attempt to replace Moshe and to sort of maintain the distance between the nation. They saw Moshe as the intermediary between them and God. You can't relate to God directly. You've got to do it through Moshe. And Moshe is much more than a man. He is this sanctified individual. He's Kadosh. Says Moshe, I have to teach the nation. Look in the first line of the Meshech Chochma. Ki ani ha'im tedamu ki ani inyan ve'eza kedusha bilti mitzvas Hashem. He says, do you really think, Moshe says to the nation, that I am sanctified without Hashem's involvement? That there's an intrinsic sanctity to me? Says Moshe, nothing is intrinsically sanctified unless it's connected to God. Sanctity emerges from God. All right, now this is an interesting discussion, because we've also learned that sanctity emerges from man acting in God's image, but that doesn't mean, that's not antithetical to what we're saying. To have sanctity, you have to be connected to God. He says, I'm not independently sanctified. That you should think that when I disappear, you're going to create something of Kedusha that is not connected intrinsically to God, and that all sanctity has to flow from that connection. And to prove that to you, look at these tablets. God created them. But if they're not understood as connected to God, they're worthless. They're valueless. It's a powerful statement, right? And what is he teaching the nation? That without emanating from God, without that God-given emanation, even the luchot are immaterial, valueless, just throw them away. So what do you see here? Look how far we've come, right? We've come from the Rashbam and the Ramban who are saying he's just acting without thinking, or the Rashbam who, quoting the Medrash, says that he couldn't even hold them, to a thought-filled process of some kind, where Moshe is trying to say, how do I get to these people? How do I teach them? And the breaking of the Luchot is part of what? Is part of that education. Something that he is doing with some calculation. But now I want to show you something fascinating. And with this is sort of the last approach we'll take. I have to admit that it's my suggestion. All right? You'll take a look at it. You'll think about it. You'll let me know what you think. There is a striking textual anomaly that takes place again when the Torah describes a scene twice. And in this case, it's the description of the creation of the second Luchot in replacement of the first. Right? So let's remember what happens. Moshe breaks the first Luchot, and as part of the forgiveness process of Klal Yisrael, he is told by God, what? Create a second set. And the difference between the first set and the second set is fascinating. First set was totally fashioned by God and written by God. The second set, Moshe is told, you carve the stones and I'll write on them. And God is teaching that this is all a partnership, that you can't, you know, this. He's teaching. Look at the way the Torah describes that commandment to create the first set, the second set. So first we're going to look at the way it unfolds as it happens. Next to last paragraph on page 3. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, psol lechol shnei luchos avanim karishonim. I want you to carve for two sets of stones like the first. V'kasavti ala luchot es advarim. And I will write on the luchot those things which are tachas, right? Ala luchot orishonim asher shibarto. That you broke. And that phrase was yasher koach sheshibarto, right? Be ready for tomorrow, and you'll get up, and you'll go in the morning, and you'll climb Har Sinai, ta-ta-ta, and this is all part of the forgiveness process. But now look, in Devarim, as Moshe Rabbeinu recalls this commandment to create the second Luchot, Moshe Rabbeinu adds something that he repeats four times in five Pesukim. All right? That does not appear in the first paragraph. Boisa yomar Hashem Eli. God said to me, psol lechosh ne luchot avonim. He's recalling this for the next generation. God said to me, carve the second set of tablets. Va'ale Eli ahara, va'asisa lecha aron eitz. And make a wooden ark. Did God say that the first time? It didn't appear. I did. And God says, I will write on the luchot, da-da-da-da, asher shibarto, visamtom ba'aron. And you'll place them in this ark. Va'as. And what did I do? First thing I did was I made an aron. I made an ark of atzei shitim, and I carved the luchot, karishonim, and I went up the mountain. And God then wrote, etc., etc., in sentence 4, and he gave them to me. I turned and I went down the mountain, and what was the first thing I did? Vasim et haluchot baron asher asiti. What's going on here? This ark, which the rabbis debate, which ark is this? Is this the ark that's later in the Mishkan? Is this a separate ark? Is this... Put that aside for now. It's clearly not the ark that's in the Mishkan, because this is made totally of wood. Why is God, it doesn't appear in God's original commandment. It appears for Moshe. It is so impactful to Moshe that in 5 Pesukim he speaks about that ark 4 times. All he had to say it is once. So what's going on here? Thank you. Okay. This is what I call I will call this the message of context. What is this ark symbolizing? This ark symbolizes that these luchot must exist within a context. Right? They have to have a home. They have to have a place to land. Picture these holy arks, these holy letters, these holy... And they have to have a place to be. And what is if the ark is symbolic of context, what is the real context that it is symbolizing? The heart of man. Right. Right. You saw the ego. Very interesting.
And the second is always references to you sin.
Very interesting. Very good. Very good. Excellent, excellent. Very good. Right. What then is Moshe's saying? Moshe is turning to the nation. And I believe that God told him to make the ark, but deliberately did not include it in the original instructions in the text so that it would emerge as something that is impacting on Moshe, and Moshe is therefore transmitting it to the nation. And he is saying, God is giving you these luchot, but if they don't have a place to be, if they don't find a home in the willing heart of man, they can't exist. In fact, and I'll go a step further, if the home that they find is not the appropriate home, then they will become dangerous. They will not even, it's not just they won't do good, but if you take these laws and they find a home in what the Ramban would describe as a menuval birshus haTorah, someone who's a bum, who not a good person, who thinks he's doing the what's right in the Torah, right? Then at that point, these luchot will not only not be what? They will not only be a positive element in God's creation, they will be turned into a samavis. They will be turned, you can misuse this in multiple ways. And therefore Moshe says, God said to me, make that ark. Show the nation that the minute these luchot are created, they must find a home. And if they can't find a home, they shouldn't exist. And let the nation learn that the home that it must find, that these luchot must find, is in the willing heart of man, who wants to use them and to use them in the way that God intends them to be used. And if you think about it, this could perhaps be the most overarching message that emerges from this entire event. You know, one of the first realizations I had when I became a rabbi, and I developed my own little motto about it, and I've said it to you a couple times. You can't judge Judaism by the Jews. All right? That sometimes the things we profess to do and to say in the name of Judaism, right, are not really what Judaism preaches. And that we have to at times back up and say, what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want from us? You know, there's a famous statement of Chazal, which I shared with you last week when we spoke about Yerushalayim, where it says, V'yahavta as Hashem Elokecha, it says, love the Lord your God. And the rabbis ask, how do you love God? And they answer, Sheyehei Shem Hashem mit'ahev al yodecha. One answer is that God's name should become beloved in the world through you. And the Gemara goes on to say the following. Because if someone is learned and teaches and he shows respect to Talmidei Chachamim and he acts in a beautiful way, what do those world around him say? Ah, look at that wonderful person. Look at what the Torah fashions. Look at what the Torah creates. And if someone professes to learn and professes to study and is meshamesh talmidei chachamim, and he acts disrespectfully to people around him, what are people going to say? Ugh, look what the Torah produces. Look what, right? The Torah has to find its place in the willing heart of vessels that are willing to what? To mirror what the Torah really wants. To mirror what it is, to recognize that the purpose of the mitzvot, according to Chazal, is letzarev es habrios, to purify and to hone us as people. And I come back finally, and this is my last comment, I come back finally to the last Rashi. Why does Rashi say that this most important act of Moshe was to break the luchot? Because at that moment, Moshe's not acting as Moshe the prophet. He's acting as Moshe the man. He's standing there, and in one instant, he has to make a decision, if we accept these latter explanations. Sees before him a tragedy. To correct it, he has to shatter everything he's been working for. But he recognizes that what he's working for can't take place in the present circumstance. And he has to be willing to destroy in order to build. And that makes him great. We have to be willing to look at what it is that the Torah wants from us and make sure that we're on the track where Torah is finding its context in our lives as individuals and as a nation. And if it is, then we're on the right track. I thank you for a wonderful year of learning together. Bezrat Hashem, we will see each other in a couple of months, and we will continue. Thank you all very, very much, everybody. Thank you. You were on track. You.